From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on, well, almost into the month of August. And this is a time when we're usually talking about schools opening and, be careful. Everybody's going back to school, drive carefully, et cetera. A different time for sure. We're pleased to be joined by Mike Wood, the principal at our great Jesuit high school here in Sacramento. Mike, good day to you.
Thanks for having me on. Nice to be here.
May you live in interesting times, and we are living in interesting times.
We are. It has certainly been a brand new experience every single day as we navigate this challenge of how to be an educational institution during this pandemic. So, yeah, interesting times for sure.
And just as you make the best laid plans, you have a meeting at 2 o'clock and it ends at 3:00 and you're, okay, let's go do this. Let's implement this plan. At 4 o'clock, it changes.
That's exactly right. You know, the best plans that we create are the ones that are inherently adaptable and flexible, because mm-hmm. what we've learned is that any particular detail of a plan is always subject to change, given what we've learned, something new, the environment changes, or even a new idea or technology is out there. Mm-hmm. So there's so many things that will change your plan. So if you can create something that has that inherent flexibility, it allows us to adapt more efficiently and more clearly as we go. Because then the next part is communicating what the plan is and the changes. So the plan itself also has to be shared in a way that's helpful for our families and our faculty and staff. So there's that constant changing and communicating about it that all comes together.
Yeah, when I was a kid, Zoom was a hot breakfast cereal. Now it's like
a way of life now.
Yeah, it's like whoa, what? Where? You know, it's why didn't I invest in Zoom? I mean, it's like holy cow, everybody talks about Zoom. And nobody even heard of it 6 months ago. It's just it's mind-boggling. So, where is Jesuit in all that? You know, I keep thinking, you know, Anthony Fauci, the famous epidemiologist, virus guy. Everybody knows who he is. Throws out the first pitch at a Washington Nationals game. He's a product of Jesuit education.
That's right.
And can't he help us get our schools open?
Well, I wish he had some sort of special deal for the Jesuit schools for sure, the Catholic schools in general.
Yeah.
But we do what all the schools are doing is we follow the science.
Yeah.
We follow the best guidelines from the health experts, and that's how we're led right now for the safety of everybody.
So are you, you know, there's so many health experts. I mean, we have the CDC and their recommendations, their guidelines. We even have the FDA gets involved when it gets involved in drugs and things. And then we have the state health department. Then we have the county health directors. And then, of course, the diocese and, the Jesuit province and everybody. You have your own guidelines and your own, thing, protocols. You've got a lot of different pieces to that puzzle.
Yeah, and one of the things that we did early on, which was helpful, is created a task force at Jesuit with a variety of folks who help us to navigate all of those different entities
mm-hmm.
so that we can have someone doing that organizing and reviewing all the thousands of pages of documents that might impact our school. And so that decision makers have it in many ways organized for us when we go through to that, whatever that next step is going to be. But the primary authority for Jesuit High School is the Sacramento County Department of Public Health.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where it's where it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's who we collaborate with and work with to see what things we can do and what things we can't do. And just to be honest, they've been excellent in terms of communicating with us, and it wasn't what I expected, that we can email them a very specific question, and within a day or less, they've given us a really helpful and clear answer. So they've been a really good partner with us this entire time.
Very good to know. Yeah, because you know, you take the governor, and you know, he's got 58 counties, and one size doesn't fit all. Clearly, things are way different in Modoc County than they are in Sacramento or Imperial County or L.A. or anyplace else. And yet here, you know, the Sacramento County people, they're on the ground here. They know what's going on here.
Right. And, you know, we've learned a lot about, you know, government in all mm-hmm. this process, things that Jesuit High School didn't have to be that familiar with. But
right.
We've learned about where decisions are made, who is the authoritative body in a particular situation. And what's also been helpful is Lincoln Schneider, the superintendent of Catholic schools in the Sacramento Diocese, has been really helpful for us as well, because he seems to really know how to navigate that element of all of this. And so
he really does, yeah.
He's been a great resource for us. And I would also say that this has been an unprecedented time of collaboration of all the Catholic schools. You know, I email and text and talk with Christian Brothers and St. Francis right now more than we ever have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been a real helpful piece of this, is learning how to work with each other even better than we had in the past.
Take us back to the middle of March, Friday the 13th. Who made the decisions, and what did you do from that point on to finish the academic year?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, eons ago
it
now.
It does, doesn't it?
But what was helpful at that time is we had already begun planning for a digital learning or remote learning protocol. One, we saw the pandemic on the horizon and thought, you know, we might have to shut down at some point for a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had experience in the previous years school shutdowns, right? Whether it was the smoke days, we had a plumbing
right.
problem.
Right.
And so we partnered with some Jesuit peer schools and started creating a remote learning protocol even prior to that shutdown. So what was helpful is we never lost a single day of instruction. We went immediately that next Monday to distance learning, used the protocol, and then carried that out through the rest of the school year, the whole fourth quarter. The decisions were made mostly by Father McGarry and I. Father McGarry, our president, mm-hmm. and I made all the final decisions, but certainly were supported by everyone on the school leadership team and the faculty and staff. So it was a lot of, I mean, in those days, back when this was all just happening, decisions were being made so quickly and communicated so rapidly that it was a whirlwind. But I was proud of our ability to jump right into the distance learning for our families and our students immediately back in March. And we've learned a lot since then. So the new protocol, the new process, is entirely different from what we experienced in the fourth quarter.
I was going to say the fourth quarter had to act. You had to transition so quickly. And really not much of a model to follow. Obviously, you sat down in June and said, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? If we have to do this in the fall, what do we need to change? What was just the overall sense of you know, April, May? What were the pitfalls? What were the shortfalls? And what were the successes?
It's a great question. I think the major pitfalls that we experienced were it became too much remote assigning as opposed to remote learning or remote teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 2 weeks into our protocol, we did a whole revision when we saw that we'd be in this for a longer period of time. And what we started to do as we learned about the technologies available to us, Zoom and other platforms, that live instruction was critical. That's our bread and butter. That's what our teachers are really good at.
Yep.
So come the fall, we learned let's have less remote assigning of work, right, where a teacher assigns something and the student does it and they never see each other.
Right.
In the fall, our instruction will be fully synchronous. It'll be a structured class day with a dress code and attendance. and Zoom etiquette and other protocols. So we'll add some if we have to be remote, or for those who have to be remote, it'll simulate an actual school day.
As opposed to you're in your pajamas, and I'll get around to watching or doing my assignment when I feel like it.
Yeah, and that's not good. Many of us who've had to work from home now have learned how much better it is if we have a better routine. You get up, you take a shower, you get dressed, and you start your work day. Even though you might be in your living room, you know, the hoodie and the hat going to work just doesn't produce the same results. It's the same for our students.
Yeah.
They crave, they don't always say this, but they do desire and want structure and guidance, and they want to know what's expected of them. So we're going to provide that guidance if we have to be in remote learning come August.
I just think you hit the nail on the head. I have four teenagers, and I'll tell you, it was so different, and each of them were different in terms of how they responded to it. That it certainly wasn't wasted time, and they all got through it. But I thought, you know, this as a long term solution, it wouldn't have worked.
That's correct, and I imagine that's the case for so many of us in the whole country right now, is learning how to adapt and be successful in this environment. Obviously, the March and April experiences were really that was a crisis mode.
Yes.
And now, as we moved into what folks are calling this new normal, I'm not sure we're there yet, but we've all needed to adapt in one way or another, and it's important that we note those things, that we acknowledge this new way of being. And making sure that whatever that is a healthy thing for us, it's a sustainable thing for us, and to move out of that crisis experience and into a more sustainable one.
So has it affected your enrollment one way or the other?
It hasn't yet. Our enrollment is solid right now. I think, and this is, again, part of our collaboration with the other Catholic schools, is it's really important that we demonstrate the value add of being at a private Catholic institution right now. What is it that we can provide, even if we have to be in some form of distance learning, that others cannot? And so that religious core is being an important part of what we do, and the reason our families are part of this community is because they want that Catholic or religious or faith-based experience. And so keeping that part at the forefront has been important. Also, the co-curricular activities that we can still do, some on campus safely and some have to be done remotely, are already being done. And so currently, I think when folks are thinking about what school they want to send their children to, we have maintained that value add in a way they're not necessarily sure they'll be able to do maybe in the public school realm, who have a much more difficult challenge than I think the private schools have. We have, however, seen folks and whose income has been changed by this.
Right, right.
And so we have lost some families to that, but really we've tried to take care of them as much as possible. So we've increased our ability to have financial aid for those families and help them, bridge the gap between whatever challenges they're facing right now, keep them in our institution so that when, things recover, they didn't have to make that difficult decision. So we are still working with lots of our families and increasing our ability to support them financially who've struggled in this environment.
We're talking with Mike Wood, the principal at Jesuit High School. Mike, the when you look at the fall, we're Sacramento County on the watch list, so there are criteria that before you can go to in person. Is the plan for in-person already in the works and you're just waiting for the green light?
Actually, well, the answer is yes to that, and it's a little bit more nuanced. Our plan allows for both fully distance learning, if necessary, in-person learning, if we can, and any version of a hybrid in between if we can only have partial.
Mm-hmm.
What we've done is set up every classroom with pan-tilt Zoom cameras. So each classroom can be live streamed to anyone who's at home, if that has to be the case, either, like I said, school-wide or just for a particular family, while also teaching to an in-person, socially distanced class on campus. So regardless of where the student is, we're going to teach in a simulated classroom environment to both an in-person audience or a stay-at-home audience. So our plan, as I mentioned at the beginning, is adaptable to any scenario. So we are set to go with whatever comes our way, and we can begin, you know, in August as planned, regardless of the circumstances.
Will the teachers be in the classroom even if they're teaching remotely?
Yes. So most of our teachers will teach from the classroom, and that is approved by the Sacramento County Department of Public Health. That they'll still follow all the same safety protocols, you know, of being on a physical campus. But some members of the faculty, for any number of reasons, cannot come to campus, whether that's a health issue or a family issue, because their children may be in full distance learning as well at that time. So we work with every individual teacher and member of our staff to support whatever needs they have to make their work environment, you know, healthy and safe for them. So each individual circumstance requires a different response, and so it's really important to us that all of our faculty and staff are cared for as much as we possibly can.
Will you have cardboard cutouts of the students sitting in the seats like they do in Major League Baseball?
I don't think so. We actually have those in our chapel. We had some students, the entire student body was in the chapel with their pictures. And so that we did that in the fourth quarter for our live streaming of masses.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I saw a highlight of one Major League Baseball game, and I just watched it with my son, and we were looking, and he said, "I thought there weren't supposed to be people there." And I said, "Those aren't people. Those are cutouts."
Yeah, I can't tell if that's a strange environment or a necessary one, as I watch the baseball games as well. I think I want them there.
It helps a little bit. I guess they say they're piping in crowd noise too. So,
yeah, I mean, whatever we can do to make it feel like it used to is probably a good idea.
I'm not sure what, you know. I mean, do you have crowd noise when it's the visiting team just hit a home run? That's got to be boos, right?
Well, there's going to be, you know, someone on the other end of that switch deciding, you know, how much crowd noise we want for that particular play.
Exactly. So speaking of sports, Jesuit High School here in Sacramento is sort of known as one of the kings of high school sports, dominate in so many areas. And I'm not just talking about winning and losing. I know, you know, the Jesuit is really a model for the way to run a sports program. In terms of character development and teamwork and all those great things. Are we looking at having a Holy Bowl in January?
So the best answer I can give is I don't know.
Yeah.
And I would be irresponsible if I tried to speculate on that. You know, the last thing I think we're going to be able to do is large gatherings.
Right.
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 So,
even if you have a game, you probably won't have anybody there or very few.
Right, so I think we have to just continue to wait and see, you know, where the numbers are, what's safe at that particular time. Obviously, we all want to have a Holy Bowl in some particular way, but I think that's still too far off to be able to predict how that's going to work yet.
In January, it's likely to be a Mud Bowl.
That's true, yeah. I mean, well, you know, most of the fields have the artificial turf now, so that helps.
Right.
And that will be a help if we do have more of our athletics take place in the spring and then in the winter, if that's possible. The weather hopefully will be mitigated by those all-weather fields now.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't get so cold. I think about the north section of Alturas and Yreka and Weed and Mount Shasta and some of those schools up in that area. Playing football in January where it's maybe 10 degrees or maybe 10 below and a foot of snow, it's going to be a little different. Truckee could be way different for those folks playing in January.
Definitely. Yeah, they'll have to, like you said, each county's got to figure it out a little bit differently.
I think you're going to have a lot of people transferring to schools in San Diego.
No, that's...
I think I'll play my senior year of football in San Diego.
A nice place to be for sure.
Yeah, so with not just athletics, but all extracurriculars, all the things that make school school, and I think, like I've said before, you know, it's there's all kinds of arguments about should we be going back, should we not be going back, and it's become a political football, if you will. I think everybody agrees virtually that in person and all that involves is clearly the best way to go. If you have to be in, you know, virtual or a distance during the fall, how can you, compared to what you did in the spring, how can you provide some of that extracurricular, or is just there any way to do it?
So there are ways to do it, and we did some of it in the fourth quarter. We're doing some now over the summer, and we have a variety of plans to how we can do that in even better ways in the fall. So, you know, some examples are our Office of Service and Justice held a virtual service immersion where they experienced people at the Keno Border Initiative and did some work to understand what was happening at that particular Jesuit ministry. And it was, you know, not ideal, right? It would have been better for them to actually go there.
Right.
But they had some experience of what that was all about, and that was an impactful experience for them. So we have many examples like that where we can have retreat-like programs, athletic conditioning safely. We can have those virtual immersions, the student council making videos for people. There's all sorts of activities that we can incorporate into the student experience, because we do need more than just that structured academic classroom experience that can happen, like I said, in person or at home. We need the other stuff, too, that animates that experience. That's also part of our mission. Now, they're hard. They're going to be hard, but we have such a creative staff. They're finding so many ways to engage our students.
You know, we hear a lot about, you know, this, well, obviously the fourth quarter, but if we have a whole year of distance learning and grading and all that kind of stuff, and how does that affect college admissions? What are the colleges telling you about that sort of thing?
You know, I haven't heard much yet. I think they're waiting as well. I think one of the things that I'm proud of, or I'll say hopeful for, is that because our return to school model still allows for our entire course catalog to be used for all UC-approved, college-approved, college prep curriculum, I think one of the value adds is that a school like Jesuit High School will allow students to have a transcript that the colleges and universities will feel confident that those students truly navigated a full course of study in that particular school. And so what we're trying to do for the universities is just demonstrate that our learning was rigorous, it was robust, it didn't miss anything, so that our graduates will be, you know, highly sought after in the college admissions process. We hope that we can prepare our students and then demonstrate to the universities that we've been successful academically and make them attractive candidates for the next level.
Plus, that transcript is going to have the word Jesuit High School on it, which is going to, you know, which is an imprimatur of excellence right off the top.
Definitely. That's always been an advantage. You know, we tell our families that one of the advantages in the college admissions process is the students who've gone before their sons, the ones who have successfully navigated our curriculum and were successful at the next level. But I think it's also important to state that even though my job is Jesuit High School and I want to do what's best for our families, I want every student in any school to have a chance to have a full curriculum, have a college prep experience and option. So I don't want our success or our endeavors in there in any way to take away from our desire to also have every student have all the same opportunities, regardless of if they're at Jesuit High School or somewhere else.
Yeah, amen, yeah. You know, speaking of athletics again, a lot of seniors, not a lot, but a handful usually, are going to be college athletes. And many of them, some of them heavily recruited, a few of them recruited at different levels. Their senior year is a real, I mean, they're being evaluated since they were in Little League, but that's a serious evaluation time for college scouts to meet with kids and come watch them play and look at their film and all that. Have you talked to your coaches? Is there any plan for that?
Yeah, so one of the things that they're able to do is send videos of their athletic ability, either ones that were, you know, filmed prior to the shutdown,
yeah,
but also things they can do maybe on an open field and do kind of a combine activity,
mm-hmm,
or a hitting display,
sure,
or, you know, running certain distances, you know, so they're able to share with those recruiters, either college recruiters or even professional recruiters, what they're able to accomplish. So
right,
maybe they clear out an entire basketball gym and can do some work and film that in a safe way. So, you know, the challenge for our student athletes is the same challenge for those recruiters, right?
Yeah.
How do they make decisions on who they want to recruit? And, you know, I think just being able to show the best that they can do at that time is really what we have. And those folks are pretty good at what they do, and they'll know the talent when they see it.
Yeah, if you can run a 4.3 40, you're probably,
yeah,
going to get an offer.
Yeah.
So yeah, the ones I feel sorry for, I think, are the kid that's been the backup quarterback until his senior year, and now he's going to be the quarterback, and this is his one shot, and might not get that shot. I guess it all works out. It's going to be the same for everybody.
Yeah, I'm, you know, there's so many things I have to.
Yeah.
That I have to, I'm so frustrated with, you know, that,
yeah,
and my heart breaks. I can't do anything about it. It's no one's fault. But I think you're right. There are so many opportunities missed,
mm-hmm,
by our students, whether it's athletic or otherwise, that they couldn't demonstrate what they've been working for so long. Even my own kids,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
who aren't in high school yet, but, you know, they trained really hard at swimming,
yeah,
over,
mm-hmm,
the winter to just be really prepared for the summer swim season, and it just got canceled, and it was all that work, and it feels like it's for nothing, and it's not. I think it's important to remind ourselves that, why did we work hard? Why did we do our best? Was it just for the result, or was it because it was the right thing to do?
Yeah.
That we should use our God-given talents regardless. We should use them to better ourselves, better our world, and bring about the kingdom. You know, so it's difficult for folks to think about it that way, but I think it's important to remind ourselves of, why did we work hard? Why did we do our best? And make sure we remind ourselves of that constantly.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, our son, who was a freshman in high school, hadn't really played organized sports, and somehow, by the grace of God, made the volleyball team, you know, and and played one game, and then it ended, you know, and it was like, I could just see how crushed he was. So into it, you know, he had teammates, he was experiencing all those joys of sport, you know, just boom, just, you know, and we had two daughters on the track team, boom, same thing. One of them, who's a special needs kid, is always last in every race and is out there trying as hard as anybody, you know, and it was so important to her. You know, I think I've got enough ego, I'd be embarrassed to be last in every race. I probably wouldn't go out for the track team, you know, but by God, she did, you know, and the same thing, one track meet and it's over, you know, and you, and yet you're right. That's a great point. You know, why were we out there in the first place? And even though it ended, if it didn't end in March, it was going to end in June anyway, or in May. And we can still, you know, look forward to doing those things in the future.
Absolutely. There's moments of consolation and desolation through all of this. That's language we use at Jesuit High School. That idea of there's these shadows that are very difficult. And there is pain, and it's not about ignoring it, acknowledging there's been some real frustration and real loss in all of this. That's real.
Yeah.
And there's been some light. There's been some realization about what's really important, maybe slowing down a little bit. Now, those things have to live next to each other and with each other. It's not one or the other. Acknowledging that desolation, those losses, and acknowledging what may we have learned and grown from all of this are important. And I struggle with that daily, right? Those things that I find are improving in myself, and those things that I'm, you know, finding myself selfish and bitter all at the same time.
Yeah, amen. We go through those emotions. You know, I think that the thing that is concerning to all of us as parents, and I have four teenagers, and they've all responded differently. And you know, you keep asking, "Are you okay? Are you doing okay? What can we, you know, how?" Obviously, as a principal, you're seeing, I would think, a wide range of emotions, and I'm sure your counselors and et cetera are really keeping a close eye on some kids that are really going to have difficulty with it, more difficulty than the average kid.
Yeah, and we saw it in the fourth quarter for sure. Mm-hmm. Those students who we were, you know, holding close in so many ways, whether academically or emotionally, we have all these support systems for them that required that they were on campus to have those supports. Right. So we had to figure out, and we weren't perfect at this in the fourth quarter by any means, how do we continue to support those students when we can't be with them?
Right.
And a lot of it was one of the most effective things we did and will continue to do is just phone calls, just a phone call with the student directly.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully our classroom environment will help solve some of those problems because they'll be with their peers, even if it's virtual, they'll be with their teachers every single day. But we need to make sure that we are helping parents know what to look for, what signs to look for if there's things going wrong, where to get help, whether from Jesuit or elsewhere, and normalize it for students that you might be feeling a certain way. That's okay. That that's normal feelings. Here's how, you know, you attend to those feelings. So some self-awareness will also be important. Some of our students thrive in the environment. They're self-starters. They're independent. They really enjoyed it. But as many students really struggled in that environment, and I think they have some fear coming back into a virtual setting or a highly regulated setting that they just didn't thrive in. So being aware, being mindful, and having all the support systems we can for them is going to be really important at this time. That includes our parents as well. We need our parents to be, they're our eyes now, where typically our teachers and our staff and our coaches are the eyes every single day. It's got to be our parents now, and how do we help them to recognize what's happening with their children in ways they haven't had to do before, right? Because for how many years their children have been at school every single day. And they've been in partnership with educators. And so I think that's a really important question and something that Jesuit High School is keenly aware of and keeping our eye on closely.
Mike, you talk about, you know, the working with county health. Obviously, you know, we're on a watch list in Sacramento County. Once we're off the watch list, you still have certainly certain protocols that county health wants you to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be inevitable as we're seeing with Major League Baseball, et cetera. You know, you're going to have a case or two cases or maybe an outbreak. Who knows? Does county health have? Is it up to you guys to say, okay, we've got to close down or we've got to do something different? Or does county health step in and say, we'll tell you what you're going to do?
So county health has provided clear guidelines on that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have it in front of me right now, but what I do understand is if you're in a more cohorted model, so the elementary school model,
right,
what they're going to ask them to do is when they're on campus, you know, all the second graders stay together all day.
Right.
And so if there's a positive case, that particular cohort would have to stay home and quarantine for 14 days, whatever they, mm-hmm, whatever they're supposed to do. In a high school model where you can't cohort as strongly, right, because there's
right,
maybe 500 to 1,000 students on campus, there'll be some cohorting, but really it becomes about contact tracing and percentage of your institution that is symptomatic or has tested positive for, mm-hmm, COVID. In all of those circumstances, you still work directly with county public health. And you say, here's what we're experiencing, here's what's happening, what is the guidance?
Okay.
One of the things that Jesuit High School is going to do is hire an on-campus medical professional.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important that, you know, I'm not making important medical decisions or public health decisions with my particular background.
Right.
We want someone who's trained in this area to be guiding us, guiding our families, and that liaison between the public health experts in our county. So even though there are guidelines that are provided for us, we will, in every single case, work directly with the county and see what the best next step is.
Have you incurred extra expenses because of all the protocols you're going to have to go through?
Oh, yes. We have a new budget line item that tries to account for all of the things that we've had to invest in. So one of them, of course, is all of our classroom technology,
right,
which includes the cameras, the wiring, the microphones. We have plexiglass shields around every teacher's desk. The mm-hmm. front row of every desk of every classroom will have plexiglass shields to protect our teachers. We have tents that help more social distancing around our campus. I could go on. There's many, yeah, many expenses that we are incurring to be prepared for when we can come back to campus.
Yeah. Well, our prayers and best wishes go with you as you move into this new academic. What's the first day of school?
August 17th.
August 17th, which is pretty much universal for our Catholic schools in the Diocese of Sacramento at all levels. And pray for the best outcome possible. This is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it.
Well, we appreciate the prayers. We're praying for you as well. And whatever happens, we'll get through this together.
Indeed. We'll look forward to talking again soon, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's Mike Wood, the principal at Jesuit High School here in Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. Back with more in the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand, for all you've done and continue to do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Marie Leatherby, the Executive Director of the Sacramento Life Center. Marie, good day
good
to you. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you are, too.
We want everybody to be very, very well.
Yes. I know. Yes.
Extra well.
Extra well.
Oh,
I know.
Man.
I've gotten to where I'm always saying, be well now.
Oh, I know. I people send you an email and they say, stay safe, be strong, be well. You
yes.
know, it's like,
yeah,
yeah it's a, may you live in interesting times.
Different times, for sure. Yep.
It's so much going on. You've had amazing. All I have talked to a number of nonprofits, people that are doing the great work. Sacramento Food Bank, Loaves and Fishes, all these people trying to help people right now. And
yes.
Talked to the Bishop Gagos Maternity Home, and they had to cancel their dinner in September. And,
I know, heartbreaking.
Going to have a virtual auction, hopefully. Where are you with your November dinner? Are you
still on? It's still a go, whether it's in person or virtual. We're still going to have our either back to our beginnings where people gather in their home for our gala and watch it live, or the Hyatt has not yet let us out of our contract. They're still hoping, but I think it's becoming dimmer and dimmer that we'd be
yeah.
able to have it in person.
So if it's virtual, you make your own prime rib in your own oven?
You could, yeah. Well, we're going to provide, just like when you buy a table, you know, a party in a basket for people with, appetizers and wine. And
oh, that's great.
Certificates for food and a beautiful centerpiece and everything you need, you know, the programs and... We've talked to a lot of people that think it really sounds fun to do it in your home, watch it on the TV, and we have a great auction already getting lined up, and so it'll be a lot of fun.
Watch out, that may become the model. People may say, "Hey, we liked it better that way."
I know. Yeah, it's something new and different. I know. And
you know, are you going to have to pay for parking in your own driveway?
I know. Yeah, send us that, though. It'll be, I think, you know, I've heard of a lot of places that have done it, and if you really do it, it's a great campaign before, during, and after, and follow up, and more people can see your work and what you do. There's been a lot of success, so...
Well, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it's interesting. My calendar, do a fair amount of speaking or emceeing, and mm-hmm. it was like just one domino after another. You know, I had what was going to be a very busy spring and fall, and it's like, boom, nope, that's canceled, nope, that's canceled, you know, and this one sounds really fun. You know, like, why don't we all do it? This sounds like fun. First off, if you live up in the Tahoe area or something, or you live way down in Vallejo or way up in Redding, you go, we can go to this thing virtually.
Yes. Yeah, we're hoping that more people be able to see it that maybe couldn't come before or some of the elderly don't like to go out and downtown. Everybody can watch it now, and kids can watch it, and that couldn't go before. So we're really thinking it'll be a great way for people to really know our work.
Yeah.
Open it up. Yeah.
Plus, so, I really hate to wear a tie.
I know. Some people don't like having to, you know, a lot of people love it. But, I think, you know, have your friends and family in your home and make an event out of it, and we're going to do what we can to help you really organize that and supply everything.
It'll be the same date, whether it's
same
in.
Date,
what's the date?
November the 7th.
November 7th.
Yes.
Very good.
And you can have your wine and appetizers and dinner, and then we'll start the program at 7 p.m. And the auction's open to anyone for the whole week. So people can go on and bid. We've got some great things lined up. So we're really excited. A lot of trips and overnights and and, you know, Hawaii, a winemaking experience, top of the world owners and chef, a party in your home, you know, with state. I mean, we just have tons of great events and things that work for people that, you know, so much has been canceled. So we're hoping this will be something that'll really light up people's lives. And the women that have been coming here, like you said, the need, it's heartbreaking. Some of the people that have, you know, families that have lost their jobs. And, you know, I mean, I just saw a lady burst into tears when we gave her diapers last week. Like, it was the biggest, you could see the pressure on these families that can't provide right now. It's, and so we're doing all we can to help at least with the needs for the kids and the diapers and clothes and all that once the baby's born. And more women are afraid that are pregnant now. You know, this isn't a, doesn't seem like an ideal time to have a baby, you know. Can't have anyone in the hospital. What if you get it? They say pregnant women can get really sick with COVID. And so there's a lot of scares and uncertainty that we're here to calm down and help support them and through that. So
it sounds like your job has become doubly difficult because, I mean, you're dealing with people who, I think in some cases, obviously if they're coming to you, I think they maybe have a leaning toward obviously having a baby and going to term, but I know that some of them are considering having abortions. Are you sensing that more of them, because of this situation now, whether it's fear of the virus itself or just the fact that now they don't even have a job, are considering abortion?
Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah.
We've definitely seen an increase and abortion-minded and just undecided, just not knowing what to do. A lot more fears being pregnant. So, yeah, thank God for the Sacramento Life Center. I mean, that they come in here and really, you know, get that support and services and hooked up with medical care and all the things that they're worried about. We really take that edge off, that there's a big support system available to them, and that really helps them to choose life. And so the outcome is all the beautiful babies we get to see.
So are you seeing more people now, fewer, about the same? How has the pandemic affected that?
Yeah, our numbers are still up over last year, believe it or not, and we're not seeing, our mobile clinic isn't out. So here in the clinic, we're seeing more pregnant women than before. And we thought it would slow. It slowed down a little bit when the pandemic first started. I think people didn't want to go out or were waiting. But now our numbers are higher than they were last year at this time, so which is good. And that they're finding their way here. And they're expecting, more of a baby boom coming because, you know, everybody was sheltered in at home for so long.
Right.
So we're seeing a little bit of that as well. Yeah, so, but it's, we've been here, you know, open. I think we were closed one day when the pandemic hurt, deciding what to do, and our phones were ringing off the hook, so we said, we've got to be here for these ladies, you know.
So have you had to make adjustments in personnel, et cetera, and what you do in an office setting because of COVID?
Yeah. So right now, we don't have support people come in. The woman has to come in alone. We're just scheduling 2 an hour and disinfecting in between. Of course, we take their temperature, they fill out thing if they've, you know, been exposed or have symptoms.
Right.
It's a little hard that they can't bring their family support person, the father, in right now, so that they all understand. And even in the ultrasound room, we're allowing them to do FaceTime, so the father can see the baby on the screen. Outside, he's waiting outside, and so it's been quite different, but we're making it work for the safety of all, and you know, it's a little quieter in here without all the hustle and bustle of families and things coming in and out, but our most important mission, taking care of that mom, is still happening.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what are your needs right now?
Well, that's good. Since a lot of our fundraising is down, I mean, of course, we always need donations, but I would just love for people to start, you know, participate in our gala this year. It's going to be at sacklifegala.com.
Mm-hmm.
I think we already have that page set up if people want to go on and start registering and start looking as we add our auction items. Or they can make a donation at just sacklife.org, our website. And we just really need people's support. It's a time like no other, as everybody knows. And we're seeing a lot of people that really, really need help. We have people that like just need gas to get, they have a preemie to get to the hospital to see their baby, and just a lot of needs that we've expanded because of COVID, that you know, trying to help people with groceries and those mm-hmm. kind of things to get them through this time. Hopefully it will be over and the world can get back to normal soon. That's our prayer.
Boy, that is our prayer. So do you need more auction items, or are you all set?
No, we definitely need more auction items because that's going to be the one way we really can make up
mm-hmm.
not having it in person. So we take nothing is too small. You know, anything. I mean, we take for our auction, from any kind of certificates to... We have a lady making 6 dozen chocolate chip cookies to deliver to somebody, or, you know, we have so much people sewing. We have a lady, a seamstress, donating a custom dress for somebody. I mean, we just have, everybody can do something and is getting really creative for this auction. So even a bottle of wine, mm-hmm. Anything like that, we put together for packages. Of course, especially, we always need, you know, timeshares or vacation homes donated. I know that's a, you know, big gift, but we do so appreciate when people can share those because it helps us raise a lot of money quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our goal, you know, we raise about $300,000 in our gala in person. Wow. It's going to take a lot of giving and auction items and participants to help us not run short this year.
Can I bid on the chocolate chip cookies right now?
Yeah. I know, that sounds pretty yummy, doesn't it?
It does. But only 6 dozen. I don't know if that's enough.
Have to freeze. With all your kids, they'll be gone in a flash.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's, wow. So how can people donate?
Yeah, they can call us up. And we can email or mail you the donation package, you know, with all the information. Number is 916-451-4357. And just ask for myself, and be happy to talk to you. And would love people to give anything. I mean, if there's a big car dealer out there, has an extra car, we're looking for it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Let's just say that boldly. You never know. There may be a car dealer out there going, gee, I didn't think about that. I think maybe I can do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then put my name on the ticket, okay?
Yeah.
No, that's you never know. You never know who's listening and who might get the idea in their head, or maybe they know somebody and say, hey, you know, the Sacramento Life Center could really use something.
Yes. We really, really can. We do great work. We see lots and lots of women and families, and we love our work, and I wouldn't want to do anything else because it's so rewarding, and getting to help these women, you know, choose life is one of the greatest gifts we can give somebody. So,
amen. So well said. Marie, thanks for all you do. Our prayers and best wishes go with you. And as I close every email, and I know you do too, stay safe, stay well, and God bless your work.
All right. God bless. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. Right. That's Marie Bye-bye. Leatherby, Executive Director of the Sacramento Life Center. Their gala, which is probably going to be virtual, but who knows. But that sounds like a lot of fun, too. With November 7, and if it's in person, it's also a lot of fun and a lot of great fellowship that night and raising money for a great cause. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just.
I'm reconciled.